talking. We're going talking today where things are popping. The Marion way, we're going to drop in on discussions of the day on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, we're going debating. We're going to debate very loud and we'll be laughing and floating high on a cloud. Phones are ringing from listeners all around on the Exchange Club. Exchange Club, and we'll guess and goof and talk on Exchange. Read, debate, and think it's Exchange. Tune in, we're on. Turn on, I'm in. It's on today, the Exchange Club.
And away we go. It's a getaway Friday. Friday, November the 28th, 2025. Last Friday in the month of November. First Friday after Thanksgiving. Tis the season. Joined in studio by Bob Welsh here. And maybe our other upper crust recipient this year. But Bob, since we've taken away a minute here and done some other programming, tell people about the Upper Crust Society and who the inductees are this year and when this all will take place, when the culmination of it all will take place.
Well, the Upper Crust Society was something that we kind of started here just to initially, you know, honor local people and put a little spotlight on them. And it's grown a little bit over the years. And this year's inductees are Larry Barnett and Bob Bender. And I think the one constant as far as selectees, the inductees, they have, you know, have some little tie to Marion. You know, although that might be a feeble tie, but it's some tie to Marion.
Well, I don't know. It's a very good list. When you look at that list, that is a strong list of people.
It is, you know, I'm proud that we got all the people in there. You know, I was really happy that we got George Cosotis in when we did. I mean, he was certainly a great inductee.
Marianne Michaels,
and, you know, I mean, sadly they both passed along, but you know, they certainly represent the best of Marion.
Well, you got Mary Ellen and Buckeye Guy and Jack Kellogg. You know, a whole Brenda Donegan. Sheriff Bailey.
Bailey or Bales?
Bailey. Definitely Bailey. I remember.
I think we've said it wrong a couple times.
I think you've said it wrong. I don't know if I have. But it's an interesting way these traditions come to be. So you always seem to, because when I say tradition, you wince at that. Now, so what is a tradition to you? Do we have to go back to biblical times to get to a tradition?
I'm not that far back, but I'm thinking a tradition, you know, 7-10 years at least.
Well, how do you get to a tradition if you don't start something?
Well, you build slowly. I mean, at first it becomes an event, and then maybe a practice, and then it works its way into a tradition.
So at what point do you say, this is not a tradition, we should not do this?
Well, I think we're crossing the threshold this year with it being a tradition.
Yeah.
You know, we've done it enough. You know, we've kept, you know, doing the CPR on this event until it's taking on a life of its own, apparently, now.
Well, people like it. It's kind of like the fruitcake toss. The fruitcake toss, I thought, was going to go away after the first year that we did it. Because the first year, it was part of something called the Winter Olympics, and that was a completely different idea. But the fruitcake toss was the thing people really liked of all the things we did with that. And so now, it's a thing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I can truly say I've witnessed it over the years growing and becoming more popular. And, you know, I think it's, you know, in 5-6 years, it's going to put Marion on the map again. It's going to be, you know, like the new groundhog.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because you talk about traditions. I think there are some traditions that have more or less went by the wayside. And, you know, that's unfortunate. Yeah. So what are you left with?
New traditions.
Yeah, new traditions. You got to have new traditions. New people spearheading things. I don't think anything goes on forever.
No, I mean, I always used to say at work, you know, the tide comes in and the tide goes out. You know, I mean, things are popular for a while, then they recede, and maybe they'll come back.
Yeah, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Matt, what do you make of tradition?
I was always under the impression that, like, you know, after 3 years, it was pretty good and well a tradition. Like, if you do it once, it's an event. You do it again, and, like, you just, I mean, I guess you did it twice. But, I mean, you do it 3 times, same time every year. I mean, I think at that point, it's, you know, pretty good and well a tradition.
Well, by the way, if you want to enter somebody in the fruitcake toss, you can do that. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. I think we have a pretty interesting list so far. Let me see here. I had the list the other day. I know we started a list.
We did start a list. I witnessed that.
Yeah, it's one of these papers down here.
For the fruitcake dogs?
Yeah, because somebody... How did that start the other day?
You got to pay those bills?
How did that start? How did it start the other day?
Well, Chip called in.
Oh, that's right. Chip called in.
And he wanted to be included, and so... I think you were hesitant at first. You go, oh, we'll start the list right now, and Chip, you're number one.
And Chip was number one.
I think you wanted to wait till next week, you know, or at least till Friday, but we broke that tradition, and we started the day early.
You know, I don't know that there's a lot of tradition with the fruitcake toss, though, as far as that goes, because it changes every year.
Yeah, uh-oh, Scott lost those. We have to start all over again.
The fruitcake toss doesn't really change every year. It just gets,
oh, he found the list. Never mind.
It's the same basic idea. Just it expands.
Yeah.
So far, Chip, Bob, Mariah Rudolph, Amy Acton, Wesley Davis, Weslin Davis, and Larry Barnett.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I'm concerned. I mean, has Amy Acton been confirmed?
That was Christian, who nominated Amy Acton.
He's going to be working on that, I guess. All right.
I would guess. Wouldn't you like to see the old doctor out here chucking a fruitcake?
Oh, gosh. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
I'm just trying to picture it there, you know. But, yeah, I mean, you get usually, you know, some governors or some other celebrities, you know, doing an event, you know, and it just, you know, casts them in a whole new light, you know, as far as being one of the people.
It certainly does. Now, does any other nominations today? 740-383-9944. Thursday night, December the 11th, 7 p.m.
I think we ought to do Vivek.
Vivek Ramaswamy?
You have to call them and let them know that they've been nominated and make sure that
you should get a hold of him.
I'll get to his press email and email him, let him know he's been nominated.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Put Matt's initials by that one.
You think you should put some, you know, Amy Acton would say that he just flies over. He flies over Ohio, so I don't think he'll be stopping.
I don't think he'll come by.
Did you hear of that whole controversy? I thought that was the strangest thing the other day, that Amy Acton put a clip on her social media of Vivek talking about school all year round, and somehow it got her censored.
School all year round.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not on any of that social media, so I'm not,
It was a drama.
Aware of what was going on, and I really don't care.
Like he won school all year round?
Yeah, there was a clip, I guess, of him saying that.
How does year-round school work?
I don't... Do any of these people have any idea? I love when I tell Matt a story. He always completely misses what the question is, and he wants to ask some other part of the story. It has no relevance to the story at all. There isn't going to be year-round school. That's not the point. There is no plan. All this is about is being censored on social media for posting a video. That's it. Could have been a video about anything. Could have been a video about butterflies.
I understand, but I'm more interested in the year-round school.
But see, you
concept.
Take these things literal. Well, see, they're not literal.
He's closer to the school age than you and I are, and so it impacts him more. But there are schools in Indiana and other states that begin in July rather than August. You know, and the school year is much longer.
It's the same amount of days. They just take breaks.
Yeah, and like they might take a longer break at Christmas or at Easter or something, but...
So it's not year-round school. They're lying.
Well,
it is because it never stops.
It does work out to be year-round. They might have a longer break, but it's still year-round.
They don't have a big break.
Yeah.
I see.
A three-month break.
Yeah. In any event.
Okay.
So should she have been censored?
No.
Well, I think her claim is that the big tech people who are in the back pocket of Republicans have censored her.
Well, you never know. I mean, sometimes, you know, these claims do have something, behind them. But I'm very far from the, actual hands-on sight of what's going on, so I can't comment any more on that. But sometimes there's a truth to the rumor.
You know, I think it's very interesting. We talked about it the other morning, that people have come out against city council voting to spend $25,000 on food for people who might need it. you know, peanut butter jelly truck gets 5,000, homeless shelter gets 5,000, Salvation Army gets 5,000. This turned into a most contentious moment at Monday night city council meeting.
Yeah, I think that people didn't like the idea of them taking back the. I mean, they had already voted previously to do it, so I don't think people liked them taking back the vote.
I don't think it was them taking back the vote. I think it was two people, the comments they were making.
Well, yes. Okay, let me rephrase. Yes, they didn't take back the vote. It passed. But yes, I mean, there were two council people who did not like the fact. I guess that because SNAP had been funded now and people are getting their SNAP benefits, there was not a need for this $25,000 to be distributed.
Yeah, but two council people, not people from the audience, really lambasted those two council people who were against it.
Yeah.
And you have
that's to me what's interesting, that it brought out that kind of passion in Aaron Rollins and Ayers Ratliff against Twyla Lang and Rob Smith.
And you have to wonder, you know, if it was unanimous when it was first passed, you know, what transpired in that 1 week that would make you all of a sudden think, no, you know, it's not necessary anymore. I mean, you know, what happened?
Well, apparently they didn't like the word SNAP in there.
Yeah, but that was the whole reason for the benefit for the motion. You know, is that these people were not getting their SNAP benefits. It wasn't the fact that we just discovered there's poor people in Marion. It's because these people aren't getting their SNAP benefits. So that was the whole linchpin to to the motion.
It was an odd moment.
So. I mean, I think that the vote came down 7-2. So
right. So again, what was the point?
I guess they were voicing their concerns because Marion seems to have a lot of financial struggle as of currently, and in their eyes it was to help in the absence of SNAP, which again they had said had been
first
funded.
Of all, how much would $25,000 have helped? That's not even a dollar per citizen in the city of Marion.
And I wasn't there, so I'm not speaking from direct knowledge, but from what I understand is they didn't give the reason, the fact that Marion was going broke, as the reason to withhold the benefits.
It was said in passing, but that certainly wasn't the main thrust.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, the main concern was, I mean, they seemed to think that there was not a need for the $25,000 because SNAP had been funded.
I don't know. It was a very bad look. Well, yeah, Ayers got emotional. Tears in his eyes. Aaron Rollins yelled at Twyla Lang.
They had to call a question because I guess Ralph Smith had misquoted Aaron Rollins, which, you know.
I don't know.
It was an interesting meeting.
It was contentious.
Do we have any hint as to what was put up as a 10% cut?
Nope, we don't know anything yet.
Okay.
You know, I guess the departments turn those in on Wednesday, and I guess we'll find out
Monday night.
when the budget is rewritten. But I thought that was an interesting moment, too, when the mayor was asked if there would be any layoffs, and he said he didn't know.
Well, I mean, he also said that, like, 80 to 85% of, you know, your budget is salary. So if that tends to be the case, I mean, you can't cut 10%. I mean, even on the low end, you can't. If you spent 20% on supplies, you can't just cut half of that.
So then, why didn't he know?
I guess there was you just didn't have numbers or something like that. Didn't know the specifics.
Well, that's interesting.
Just deflecting it up here more than anything, but yeah.
Could have been a little bit of a deflection.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to tell from time to time. Ah, here we go. Bob, have a seat. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. We'll get Bob Bender joins us here for the end of the program today. Bob, how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was too much.
Too much. Too much.
Too much good food, too much family, but it was very good.
What's your favorite part of Thanksgiving?
I suppose the the holiday gathering.
Yeah. It's what do you have a favorite food for Thanksgiving?
I like sweet potatoes and marshmallows. Mm.
You know, Bob, you've spent so long. How did you get into journalism? I want to talk a little bit about your career here.
It's an interesting question to me, but I appreciate you asking. I originally wanted to just be a DJ, a record spinner, and that's what I had done in college. And I had an opportunity to be somewhere where the newsmakers of the day were. And I thought, well, you know, this is pretty neat to be there. And that kind of got me caught on journalism, and I never left.
How did you end up in Marion, Ohio?
Well, I went to Cleveland and took a left.
And it got you here.
It did. I was looking for an opportunity in Western Massachusetts, and I saw something in a broadcasting magazine. They were looking for a news person in Marion, Ohio, and I really wasn't sure where it was. And then I found out where Ohio was, and then Marion. And I went and had an interview with the president, George Scantland III, and it turned into a very enjoyable decade of journalism.
Now, you were a newsman there. How did you end up in the news business?
Well, I think being present and actually seeing where the news was taking place, I had a chance to go to a speech by Richard Nixon, who was running for president at that time. And after ending up in the first row, I said, wow, this is neat. I really enjoy being here where the events of the day are taking place. And that made me forget about being a DJ.
What was it about WDIF in that period that is so well thought of by people even today? Reunions still happen.
Yes, we had one earlier this year. And the general consensus is that George Scantland, as president, had hired excellent people. Everyone he hired had worked in another station in a larger market. And so it was pretty easy for us to put together from scratch a new station, the music choices, the personalities, and me in the newsroom just all fit together. And we were better than many other people.
Well, I would definitely agree with that. And, you know, it was an interesting time in Marion in the 80s because the Marion Star is still up and running at that point very well. A lot of reporters. And WMRN made a switch in the 80s and brought Marianne Michaels in from Channel 4. And Madge Cooper came out of retirement and started back at WMRN. Charlie came over to WDIF. You were there as a newsman. There were a lot of really talented people working in Marion at all these different outlets at that time.
Well, I guess if you have good people, you can have success, and it really doesn't matter what the field is.
Now, you ended up interviewing Richard Nixon at one point, didn't you, Bob?
Yes, I did.
Now, he's an interesting fellow, most people say. Did you interview him? Was it in the airport?
It was. They did not announce when he was coming in and what airline, and I expected him to be in a private jet with Secret Service people still protecting him, but it wasn't that way at all. He came with one person, the person who ended up burning his library, and I wasn't even sure where he was going to be, but I went with some people from Channel 10, where I was working at the time, and we looked out the window because we had a good idea about what time he'd be coming in. And the first plane that we saw, and that was in the days when you could go right up to the gate. There was no TSA to block your entrance. And so that plane came in, and from the jetway, he was the first person off the plane. And I thought, well, this has worked out well. I introduced myself, and he had come in for Woody Hayes' funeral. So we talked briefly about Woody, and then he went down to a private room in the airport, I assume waiting for a car or something to take him to where he was going in Columbus. And I was very happy, and the cameraman I was with, we shook hands that we had the only video of him in Columbus at that point. And from down the hall, this person stepped out and waved back at me, "Mr. Bender, the president says he's got a few minutes to talk to you." And so we started talking, and there were several things that I came away from. One of them was the fact that he was actually taller than I expected. Somehow people perceived him as being, you know, less than 6 feet tall, but he was about 6 feet, and at that point that was taller than me. The other thing that impressed me about him was his ability to remember things. He asked if I'd gone to Ohio State. I said, no, I went to Boston University. He said, oh, yeah, I worked with Dr. So-and-so from there. I thought, wow. He just pulled that name right out of the ether. And he also answered my question, so how did you meet Woody Hayes? And the two of them actually had a lot in common. Woody was interested in history and politics, and Richard Nixon was interested in football. And so a friendship was born.
You know, to interview a president is a big, big deal. And Richard Nixon, the thing you keep hearing from people over and over is that he was very uncomfortable and shy around people. Did you pick up on any of that when you were around him?
Well, there were not a lot of people around to begin with. I would say he was very polite, but kind of formal, not a slap you on the back type of guy. I've met politicians who were more outgoing than he was.
Now, somebody else you interviewed who everybody will know and love is Bob Hope. Tell me about an interview with Bob Hope.
Well, I met Bob Hope a couple of times. One of them was at Ohio Stadium. He came out for a football game, and I was there and happened to talk to him. And it turned out that he was very, very relaxed. I mean, he's more what you'd expect a performer to be.
Did he say anything to you that sticks out in your mind?
Still does. One thing was when I asked him, you know, what's your secret of longevity? At that point, he was probably in his 80s, and as you know, he lived to be 100. And he said his secret was just to keep active, keep going. He said, I'd rather wear out than rust out. I still remember that.
That's a good line.
It's a great one.
It's a good line. What are the interviews that stick out in your mind?
Well, interviewing a president is certainly one of them. Another one was a musician, and the name may not ring a bell to a lot of people, but those who know the name Pablo Casals would say, oh, yeah, he was the greatest cello player that ever lived. And I contacted him in Vermont, where he lived during the summer. And I was told, yeah, you can come out, so come to the house, and you can do your interview there. We got to the house. The door opened up, and I could hear somebody playing the cello. And I said to myself, wow. This may be better than an interview. Actually, hearing this superstar of the orchestral world practicing.
Mm. Now, Bob has a unique distinction, especially here in Marion now, because at the time he interviewed this person, which I believe was over the phone, but I don't know if it was on air or not. You'll have to remind me of this, Bob. But you are one of the few people, maybe the only person in Marion, to talk with Nan Britton, who later on went to be, what we know now, had an affair with President Harding that produced a daughter, that produced a grandson. I've interviewed the grandson, but at the time you interviewed her, I believe she was in her 80s or 90s, she was thought to be a liar. She had written this book, The President's Daughter, and there were no letters to prove it, and people believed that the Carrie Phillips thing was probably more probable. Now, many years later, we find out that Nan Britton was absolutely telling the truth. How did you get a hold of her? And was that on the air, or was that for a magazine?
Well, I was working part-time with News Life, which was a twice-weekly publication. And the person I was working with, Ron Cass, actually had gotten a phone number from someone who lived in this area and was still friends with Nan Britton, who lived in California.
And did you have her on the air, or was it just for the magazine?
No, it was on the air also.
So what was she like?
She was very sharp. She did not sound like someone who was in their failing years.
Leaving that interview, because at that time it was thought not to be credible, did you think that she was legitimate?
I felt comfortable that what she was telling was the truth. Although, I said to myself, maybe this is what she remembered.
Yeah, yeah.
And the older I get, the more I appreciate memory problems.
Well, how did you end up on WBNS, make the move from radio to television?
It wasn't something that I was looking for. I got to know a lot of people at Channel 10, and I got a call one day from the assignment editor. And he said, we're looking for someone who might be able to do some local coverage. At that time, they were thinking about setting up satellite news bureaus in areas that were one or two counties away, Delaware or over in Newark, or in my case, Marion. And they said, we'll set you up, come in, and let's talk.
And did pretty good.
Oh, apparently it was good enough, and they said, yeah, well, they didn't go ahead with the idea of expanding their studios, but I did get to join the news staff. And unfortunately, as often happens in broadcasting, especially TV, they had a change in personnel, and I was among those who got swept out the door.
Swept out the door at that, unfortunately. But you ended up teaching journalism at Harding for many years.
That's true. When I left Channel 10, I ended up working at Smith Clinic as public relations director and had that for 13 years. And problem with the Downtown Marion organization was, as its first director, I thought I was going to have to go and raise money for my own salary. But I was told, no, we'll have people to take care of that. Unfortunately, after 3 years, the money ran out, and so I was looking for something else with maybe some more stability and long life than I had found in my other jobs. And one of the people that I got to meet over the years was Carol Bebout, who at that time was a principal at Harding High School. And she called me and said, well, we've got an opening coming up. Would you be interested? I said, sure, sign me up.
What were those years like? What's it like to teach kids?
Everyone I've talked to who's been in the business long enough says it's not like it used to be. And although I've been out of there for 8 years, I've still kept in contact with people, and they say it's really tough now because I hate to paint a broad brush of a whole generation, but I found that many of the students I had just weren't very respectful of either me or the school. If they were bad and I had to send them to the office, I knew nothing would come of it because at that time they were pressured from above not to do much. So there was not a lot of discipline, and that was kind of distracting.
When you reflect back now on your broadcasting career, what do you think?
I think I was very lucky. When I looked at some of the places I got to go and the people I got to work with, I really think I was very lucky to be where I was when I was. WDIF was a brand new radio station, so no one had much expectation of what to get from this station. Well, we went on the air at 6 in the morning that day in 1975 and immediately got positive response from people. One of the stories that I did that day was an interview with the mayor at that time, Don Quaintance, who said he has decided that he's going to retire. Well, that was a pretty good story to
day one
to start off with. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting because Don Quaintance, this was City Hall in those days. So his office would have been in this building.
Hmm.
Yeah. Who would have thunk?
Right.
It all comes together.
And I got to go to different places. Our station wanted to expand its coverage and not just talk to the people who were working at City Hall, but working at the State House and even in Washington. And one thing I learned was never be afraid to ask someone a question. Well, what's the worst that could happen? They'll say, no, I don't want to talk about it. Ask me something else.
In Columbus politics, what's a name that sticks out in your mind? Is there a governor or a congressperson that sticks out?
Well, again, during my time in Columbus, I got to work or be in contact with the mayors and the governors. So I'd have to say John Kasich was one who was a congressman. And Governor Rhodes, Jim Rhodes, he was not your typical slap you on the back type of politician, but he got his job done.
He did, and people loved him. Many, many terms as governor of the state. What was it about him? Could you tell why people liked him so much?
He was a down-to-earth guy. I remember I was at the mall with my girlfriend at the time, who later became my wife. And the governor came over, and I said to her, well, would you like to meet the governor? She said, well, okay. So I introduced him, and his first question to her was, would you like some popcorn?
Down to earth.
That's what made him different than others.
Were you surprised, working in local government here, at the ascension of Mary Ellen Withrow? Because her ascension pretty well happened during your time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember we had a reporter working with me who went down to Columbus when she was sworn in. And, I knew her from her time in Marion and heard the story of how she got to sign the currency that is still going around today. You don't see as many of those bills, but the $20 bill has lasted longer than the penny.
It certainly, the penny didn't make it. Unfortunately, there's still some around, but it didn't make it as far. How would you like people to reflect back on your career if they read about you, people pull articles, or catch something that you did?
Well, I hope they remember that I was a person who was not afraid to ask people tough questions and get the information that was needed, because I always thought when I interviewed anyone, what would my listeners like to know? And I think you, Scott, have followed that same approach, and you've had great success also with the people you've interviewed, and I attribute that to that same philosophy of asking questions that anyone else might want to ask.
You know, it is true that what are people going to say? No, I don't want to talk about that. Well, that's okay. We can go on to the next thing. So it's fine, and it's great to have Bob here today, and we've got about 10 minutes left in the program. But Bob came in today because this year we are adding him to our list of Upper Crust Society members. Now, the list right now is Mary Ellen Withrow, Buckeye Guy, the late George Kasotis, the late Marianne Michaels, Sheriff Tim Bailey, Brenda Donegan, and former Mayor Jack Kellogg. And Bob, what is the process with the Bob Welsh? What is the process with the Upper Crust Society? You have something with you.
We do. We begin the process with our inductee signing a pizza crust.
Okay. Yes, an actual pizza crust. So Bob will get this here.
I was reading his face when I said that, because when I said that to Larry Barnett.
Oh, yeah, Larry Barnett's the other inductee. We have Bob Bender and Larry Barnett this year.
He had kind of a surprise reaction, like, what?
You know, there was another ascension, Bob. Larry Barnett, what a guy he is.
Oh, and a great storyteller, because he did so many things and always got audiences interested in what he did. So I followed him through the years, and I get to see him every so often, and it's still fun to see a local guy does good.
Yeah. Now, Bob, you started in Marion in 75, right?
Correct.
50 years ago this year.
That's why we had the big WDIF reunion.
The big 50-year anniversary. What was the talk at the 50-year anniversary?
Well, people tended to remember either specific incidents or particular people, because we had quite a group.
Bob, go ahead and sign the pizza crust there.
And take up all the space you need there, but give us your John Henry, so to speak, or John Hancock. And
yeah, here we go.
And Bob Bender.
Yep, absolutely. And Bob Welch, this adds to our list.
It adds to our list.
Larry Barnett was in earlier today, and he signed his pizza crust. So this will be very, very good. Now, you take these back to Columbus.
I'll take these back to Columbus. Photograph them and include them on a plaque, and the pizza itself will also then be shellacked and will end up somewhere in a big pizza museum.
Absolutely.
Maybe we should get a wing here at the Historical Society or something.
Well, you never know. You never know. Stranger things have happened, and the presentation of that goes on December the 11th. Larry Barnett will be back for that, and we'll have a good time with that as we do each and every year, which has been going on for quite a while. And we're always so happy with that. And as I say, Mary Ellen Withrow has done it, Buckeye Guy, George Kasotis, former Mayor Jack Kellogg, former Sheriff Tim Bailey, Brenda Donegan, Marianne Michaels, the whole gang. So it's gained momentum each and every year, and we are certainly happy for that. And Bob is getting his picture taken with the signed pizza crust here, which Bob Welsh will take back to Columbus and make a plaque out of, which will be great. And again, December 11th is the day we will celebrate that. Now, Bob Bender, before we got about 7 minutes left in the program, people in Marion Broadcasting, what are your thoughts and memories of Madge Cooper? I know you didn't work alongside her, but you certainly were aware of her.
Well, Madge was very interesting, as you know, Scott, because she had such a wide background, and she remembered things and people. And again, for someone from a small city, such as Marion is, to wind up going to fashion shows in New York, that's not something where you normally get people from smaller communities.
No, and I think she had a very conversational style. When I got to work with her later in her life, later in her career, I remember going to the charity ball and anchoring that with her. And Madge didn't have a note. She just knew everybody. She knew everybody in town. She would talk to the doctors. She knew all about fashion. And she really knew her stuff. And that was well into her 90s.
Well, I think one of the things, Madge and Charlie Evers were two people who come to my mind that people knew them by their first name. So if you asked someone who'd been in Marion for around what they thought of Madge, they wouldn't say Madge who or Charlie, Charlie who.
All right. You knew. You knew. And you worked very closely with Charlie because he came over to WDIF while you were there. What are your memories of working with Charlie?
Charlie and I go back a number of years. In, I guess, 1982, we had been chosen to be part of the first men's tap line for Christmas at the Palace. And Charlie kept insisting he didn't know anything about dancing. And he was probably fairly close. But we practiced together. We ended up going on a trip with the National Guard to Panama. And when we got there, the two of us actually practiced our dance routine. And on top of it, his daughter and my wife were giving birth at about the same time. So we had a connection there, too.
Now, you continued in that Christmas tap line for how many years, Bob?
Altogether, 40.
40. Phew. Now, what was that like for 40 years to go out there each and every year and be part of that men's tap line?
Well, it was wonderful because we formed kind of a club whatever year it was, and we always opened up the second half of the show. We were the first act in Act Two. So we had time to just sit around and shoot the breeze.
Now, it's just been in recent years that you have given this up, isn't it, Bob?
Yes. 1982 marked 40 years since I first put on my tap shoes.
So 2022 was the last dance?
Yes, to be in.
To be in.
But we have continued to go and see the show, and now I've got a different appreciation.
When you were teaching at Harding, were there any students who you thought, this could be somebody in the world of internet today and blogging and all this, that could do something in broadcasting?
No one's coming to mind immediately, but I had one student who ended up living in New York and getting into theater. His name was Matt Mead. And he has written some kind of show, and I'm looking forward to seeing it because the last time I saw Matt was at the Palace Theater. He was in town visiting, and he always entertained our class on Fridays because one thing he liked was we'd play a game, and I always counted on that as a way to pass the time and hope that the kids would appreciate it.
Now, you also have a lot of talent in your family.
Oh, yes.
And tell us.
Well, I don't want to sound boastful, but my daughter decided at a very early age she wanted to do something in theater. She actually had talked to the director of the first Annie show, and she wanted to be one of the orphans. Well, she was about 5 or 6 years old, much too young, but she really had a great way of memorizing all the songs that were going on. And eventually, when it came time for college, she went to Northwestern University, got a degree in theater, and has continued to have friends in the business. I mean, when I hear her talk about people, it sounds like a who's who on Broadway.
It Is it fun to watch your child up there doing things like that?
Well, it always has been for me. She's a very good performer. She did dance numbers with Edie Cook's dance studios, and she knew her stuff.
Do you have any regrets?
Not really. I consider every job I ever had was one that I liked doing. I never get up on a Monday morning and say, another week of this again.
Well, it's so interesting because recently the newspaper profiled, I think, 5 or 6 people from Marion's broadcasting history. And Bob was one of those people. And the newspaper was asking my opinion on some of those. And the truth is, everybody I ever talked to, whether it was Madge or Marianne or Charlie or Jeff Ruth or Terry Cole, anybody who I ever would talk to in broadcasting in Marion always had positive things to say about Bob Bender and how good of a newsman you were. So I was so glad to see that article picking who they picked, because it certainly was the right people.
And I appreciate the good things you had to say about me.
Well, they were all true. And I'll tell you one thing that I remember is when I interviewed Helen Thomas back in 2010, one of the biggest things that came out of that for me was Bob called me and asked me if I would come speak to the journalism class at Harding. So I thought, I have to be on my toes that day, because I'm gonna do this in front of Bob, so I can't screw this one up.
Well, I think that my students always appreciated any connection I could make with someone they might have heard of or knew of. I remember going to see some sort of show in Licking County, and I said to my wife, "Isn't that Archie Griffin sitting in back of us?" So during intermission, I introduced myself, asked if he'd be willing to come on the phone with my journalism students. And I tried to instill in them some of the old-fashioned ideas of be balanced and be accurate.
Never hurts to ask. You never know what will happen. Yep. And it ended well.
Yes. In fact, if I had had better preparation, I would have been here a few minutes earlier rather than later, but
better late than never, Bob. We got it in.
Okay.
We got it in. And we're so glad that Bob Bender will be a member of the Upper Crest Society. Bob, it's so good to see you, as it always is when I see you in the grocery store or anywhere else in town. It's always fun catching up and seeing what's going on.
Well, I appreciate your inviting me here and inviting me into this society. And hopefully I won't be one of those crumbs in the upper crust.
Bob Bender, one of the best broadcasters in Marion history. Certainly one of the best newsmen. For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back. And he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples.